First on the agenda, we have SF-2481, the Hunger Free Campus Grants Appropriation with Senator Putnam. Welcome. You may begin your 1 minute of testimony.
It's a good bill.
I'm done.
Too much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, for agreeing to talk about an incredibly important issue very quickly and briefly, apparently. So today, members, as you all know, hopefully you remember, for the past couple of years, we talked very seriously about student basic needs, and one of the core components of that conversation has always been food insecurity. So in 2019, this body passed the Hunger Free Campus Act, which provides resources and organizational capacity to different universities so that they can set up their own nutrition programming and food banks, food shelters kind of situations. In 2023, we actually funded it, though. In 2021, I think we passed it again and funded it slightly. In 2023, this body, this group of individuals sitting around this table, believed enough in this issue that we all put significant resources towards this this purpose. This bill makes some administrative changes. Make some administrative changes. It will cut red tape and streamline the existing Hunger Free Campus Act and help more campuses get more money for hunger prevention. It also takes the existing competitive grant program in the Office of Higher Education, funded at $1 million per fiscal year, and directly appropriates $600 per year to the Minnesota State System and $200 per year to the University of Minnesota System, and keeps $200,000 for the competitive grant program for private and tribal colleges. This language also makes the grant application process less burdensome. Currently, campuses have to apply for a Hunger Free Campus designation and then separately apply for the grant. This is much more efficient, much easier for all the institutions and for the individuals who are getting the grants to do this work. It does not in any way appropriate any new money. I'll say that again. It doesn't cost anything. This is not new money. We're just finding a more efficient way of doing the program after all. Administering the competitive grant is costly, and we've heard from both the Office of Higher Education and the colleges that the current process grants out the door way too slowly. So this makes the whole process more efficient. It gets the resources to where they need to go, and we already know that this program has been incredibly successful. This is what government is supposed to do. We're supposed to help. When we figure out something that works, make it better, and that's what this bill will do. That's my take on the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much, Senator Putnam, and I understand you have an A1 amendment.
I do. I would like to move the A1 amendment as well, please.
Senator Putnam moves the A1 amendment. Is there any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The amendment is adopted. Our first testifier is Shay Horning, State Government Coordinator with the University of Minnesota Undergraduate Student Government. Welcome. Please introduce yourself for the record and begin.
Chair Fateh, members of the committee, my name is Shay Horning, and I serve as the Director of State Affairs for the Undergraduate Student Government at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities. In student government, we advocate on behalf of the roughly 40,000 undergraduate students on the Twin Cities campus, a lot of whom are food insecure. That is why I am here today asking you all to support SF-2481 and provide funding for Hunger Free Campus grants. Nearly one in five University of Minnesota students struggle with food insecurity, which makes it harder to focus, complete assignments, and ultimately graduate. Far too many students are constantly choosing between paying for groceries or paying for rent or paying for tuition, and often paying for groceries is sacrificed first. It's easier to try and get by on fewer meals than it is to risk not coming up with the month's rent or not being able to cover a tuition payment. I lived in an off-campus apartment for 1 year, and there were too many days where I could only afford to have one substantial meal in a day. And situations like this are normalized as just being part of the college experience. But the reality is that food insecure students are 43% less likely to graduate. All of these costs associated with living on campus and attending a university are making it harder for students to achieve a degree, which is the very goal that brought them there in the first place. A $200,000 investment will fund on-campus food pantries, SNAP access, and hunger awareness programs that will directly support students at the University of Minnesota. The Nutritious U food pantry that we have is an incredible resource, but it's only open for a couple days every other week and is particularly inaccessible to students on our St. Paul campus. Hunger-Free Campus grants have an incredible ability to make the resources that we have, like Nutritious U, even better and serve more students. When our food pantry is open, it always has long lines. Students rely on these resources. I have friends that still live on campus, and the food pantry is their primary source of food. These grants will provide campuses with the funding they need to give more students access to fresh food, allowing them to focus on their education instead of where their next meal will come from. Because of this, I urge you to support SF2481. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Our next testifier is Michelle Trumpy, director from the Nutritious U Food Pantry.
Welcome.
Please introduce yourself for the record and begin.
Good afternoon, Chair Fateh and members of the committee. I'm Michelle Trumpy, Public Health Director at Boynton Health at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities campus. And in that role, I oversee the Nutritious U Food Pantry. I'm here today to testify in support of SF2481. The number of students experiencing food insecurity across the University of Minnesota system is substantial and growing. Currently, one in four students across the University of Minnesota are reporting food insecurity. Hunger jeopardizes students' ability to be academically successful, to reach their academic goals, and to ultimately increase their ability to earn a family-sustaining income. Over a third of University of Minnesota students who reported food insecurity reported that it impacted their academics. The University of Minnesota system is responding to this important student need. Each campus offers services such as a food pantry, support for students accessing SNAP benefits, and emergency grants. When we compare the need to what is currently offered, it's clear that we need to expand services to help hungry, stressed students. One of the most efficient, impactful ways we can do this is to expand access to food pantries on campus. Expansion can take several different forms, including increased hours, locations, and products offered. On the Twin Cities campus, we have focused on adding culturally specific foods, such as halal goat meat and other fresh, healthy foods. We have also expanded to our St. Paul campus, and we're gonna have our second event there of the semester tomorrow. This year, both the Duluth and Twin Cities campuses received the Office of Higher Education Equipment Grant to expand our pantry operations. We could continue those efforts if we knew we had the funds consistently appropriated to serve our students. On the Twin Cities campus, the Nutritious U Food Pantry, we served approximately 400 more students per month last year than the previous year, for a total of 2,000 student visits per month. We did this by doubling the amount of time that we're open, and we know that if we build the resources on campus, that students will utilize it, and this supports students in reaching their academic goals. I'd like to share one student's story, Julia, from our Duluth campus. Julia is a full-time student who pays her own tuition in order to fund her education. She works full-time in addition to her full academic course load. At times, like many other students, she has to make the decision whether to pay her rent and other bills over purchasing food. Julia learned about the campus food pantry, Champ's Cupboard, as a first-year student and makes the use of that pantry at times when her finances are tight. Julia indicates that accessing food pantries in the community would be challenging for her as she doesn't have a car and scheduling would be hard. Having an on-campus food pantry is essential for Julia. While this is Julia's story, we know that there's many students across the University of Minnesota system who have similar stories. SF2481 will support the University of Minnesota system in strengthening solutions to food insecurity on campus to help students like Julia. Our goal will be to develop and implement infrastructure to better support students in meeting their basic needs to reduce stress and support their capacity to be successful in college. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Our next testifier is Gabriella Cohen, student at Inver Hills Community College. Welcome, please introduce yourself for the record and you may begin your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Fateh, and thank you for the members of the committee for inviting me here and for this opportunity to share my personal experience as a student and as a worker who has utilized the food pantry on my campus. It is an honor to be asked here to speak on behalf of such an important issue. My name is Bree Cohan, and I use she, her pronouns. I'm an underclassman attending Inver Hills Community College, and as of about 3.5 hours ago, I turned 20 years old today. I'm the student vice president. I'm the student vice president of my college, club leader, and food pantry employee. I originally was going to join the Air Force out of high school. I was a week away from signing my papers when I was kicked out of my home at 18. Due to this, my processing was delayed, and I had to figure out how I was going to live. I thought, what better place to rebuild than community college? I went for my first semester to take the EMT program, and most days during the first month, I was eating a meal at night so I wouldn't go to bed hungry. Learning from my classmates that I could get staples like grains, vegetables, and fruits from the pantry changed my life. I never really left the college center, so I never knew where the pantry was on campus. I was able to gain back some of the weight I lost, and I was able to be more present during my skill assessments for class. The part I'm most thankful for came when I had health issues. I went to the emergency room after severe pain and found out I had to have my gallbladder removed about 30 years before the average patient. The strain this put on my financial and physical health was daunting, along with the time off I would need, but knowing my campus had a food pantry, I never once had to worry about not being able to eat when I was recovering. Since then, I started working in the campus pantry. Each week, I help pick up about 1,000 pounds of food for what our students need, and at the end of the day, after unpacking, I see a lot. All the students have the same relief that I felt and share the same stories with me as I work. Sometimes it's our nursing students grabbing a quick snack. Other times it's a parent picking up soup. No matter what it is, I never doubt that it wasn't what they needed. Thank you to the chair and to the committee for your time today. I would also like to thank the Minnesota Legislature for pushing for the Hunger Free Campus Grant Program to address food insecurity among our students. I support the continued funding for this program to combat hunger and ask that the committee continue to allow students like me the fuel to grow.
Thank you so much for your testimony and sharing your story. Our last testifier is M. Hodge, a student at Minnesota State University, Mankato. Welcome. Please introduce yourself for the record, and you may begin your testimony.
Hello there, Chair Fate and members of this committee. My name is M. Hodge, and I am a Community Leadership Fellow through Students United with a focus on legislative affairs. I am also a student who is about to graduate this spring at the University of Minnesota, Mankato, in my bachelor's education studying social work. Through the Community Leadership Fellowship, I have had great experiences to interview Minnesota State staff and students, complete policy research, and provide recommendations for Students United agenda. Today, I am here to testify in support of the Hunger Free Campus Grant appropriation. And while the image of the typical college student often revolves around campus life, academic pressures, and social activities, for many, there's an added layer of struggle. The inability to reliably access enough food or basic needs for a healthy, active life. This issue affects a diverse group of students across the state, including those from low-income families, first-generation college students, and students balancing work with school. The increasing financial pressures on students make food insecurity a serious concern for both their well-being and their academic success. In an article from 2023, a U of M professor, Melissa Laska, stated that 1 in 4 college students in Minnesota are food insecure from her research. This problem isn't confined to any one type of institution, affecting students on both urban and rural campuses alike. In fall 2024, I started researching the Hunger Free Campus Grant and how it can help students living with the daily burden of food insecurity. Food insecurity is a growing problem on college campuses, including in Minnesota, where many students face challenges not only in their studies, but in meeting their basic needs. So I interviewed pantry directors at Bemidji State University, Central Lakes College, Metro State University, MSU Mankato, MSU Moorhead, Southwest Minnesota State University, and Winona State University to better understand the issue of food insecurity on campus. Campus pantry directors balance many roles on their respective campuses, but always make sure to focus on the pantry, consistently budgeting, collecting orders from partners, making sure the shelves are always stocked, and connecting with students, writing grants, and networking with local and statewide organizations. However, these directors' roles rarely focus only on basic needs and often include managing the entire student union, campus civic engagement, or student leadership organizations. Without funding, these pantries would struggle to remain open as multiple on-campus priorities compete for attention. And the need is only growing. For example, Mankato State's food pantry director, Megan Hootmaker, said in fall 2024, they were already at capacity of about 500 to 600 students a week. Now this spring semester, participation has jumped to about 750 plus students a week and are extremely busy trying to maintain their operations in stock. This has led to weeks-long interruptions in service. And through my interviews, I heard from all pantry directors that the current grant timetable has a harmful delay. Accounts for purchasing run dry well before the February reimbursement. leading to service interruptions, empty shelves, and hungry students. Students United supports a direct appropriation that makes the Board of Regents of the University of Minnesota and the Board of Trustees of the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities able to directly distribute funds to improve the timeliness of the grant. With that said, thank you for the opportunity to share this qualitative research about the campus food pantries and nonprofits committed to helping feed students. Thank you, Senator Putnam and Chair Fateh, for your continued support of this effort. And that's all I got.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Are there any questions from members? Senator Doran Clark.
Thank you, Chair Fateh. Thank you, testifiers. The University of Minnesota Minneapolis campus is in my district, and I've asked a few students, what do you need most? And I would expect that they would say, better funding for grants, better improve this program. Time and time again, they say, a grocery store in the neighborhood. And I go, what do you mean? And they talk about how food is too expensive and they have to make choices. This bill understands and respects that and provides a way to make it easier for our students to learn. I'd love to get them a grocery store in Dinkytown. I think this is a more realistic first step, and so thank you for bringing this and advocating.
Thank you so much, Senator Clark. Senator Utke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And for Senator Putman, in the amendment going to the repealer, can you tell me what got repealed?
Senator Putnam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Utke. I might have to phone a friend on that one. Ms. Bush.
Ms. Bush.
Chair Fateh, Senator Utke. Yes, the Hunger Free Campus program was previously codified in statute.
Oh, sure.
So the repeal is repealing the statute and moving it to session law because the funding mechanism is changing.
Senator Utke.
Yep, thank you. And second question is, I think when you started the introduction, you said, I think I heard say no new money, but now when I see these appropriations, is this taking it from what was this in the base? And we're just reappropriating it through the new language.
Senator Putnam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Utke. Yes, this is, we're just changing the way that money that already exists is distributed to make it a more efficient program. But it does not add any money to the program.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Senator Utke. Anyone else? Any closing comments, Senator Putnam?
Thank you for listening to the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Putnam. And with that, the bill is now laid over. Next up, we have Senate File 2406, Senator Umu Verbaen, Emergency Grants Appropriation. Welcome, and you may begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we have the bill before us that is just sort of like the base appropriation, and then I do have an amendment that we'll talk about a little bit later. I think I'll go into just sort of an explanation of the bill and we'll hear some testimony and then discuss. But essentially this is the emergency assistance grants, which we have supported in this committee in the past. And this will directly allocate emergency grant funding to the systems to sort of streamline the administration of the program. This new approach will allow for immediate deposit into a designated account, which will enable quicker distribution of funds to colleges and universities for students with approved emergency grant applications. I'd like to, I've talked about this in the committee in the past when I carried the bill, but just want to remind us of some of the highlights from the Higher Education Emergency Relief Fund 2021 annual performance report. So when the pandemic hit, federal aid had allowed colleges and universities across the country to distribute this sort of emergency aid to students. And one of the big lessons that was learned was that the availability of this funding is like really important to keeping our students in schools. 9 in 10 colleges and universities said that student emergency grant dollars enabled them to keep students enrolled who were at risk of dropping out just by providing that financial support. And there is really a clear need for our students to access this sort of emergency funding. The Hope Center took a survey of nearly 10,000 Minnesota students at 25 two-year colleges and 3 four-year universities. 37% of those respondents had experienced food insecurity in the past 30 days. 48% had experienced housing insecurity over the past year, and 18% had experienced homelessness. And so when we've had students here in committee in the past, they've talked about those things, just needing help with rent or transportation or food costs, those things that come up, and the institutions really know their students best. So being able to have that funding available to help keep our students in school is really important. So we will hear today from Minnesota State. Since Minnesota State launched their program in March 2024 to help address students' unexpected financial emergencies, almost 5,000 students have been awarded an emergency grant. And data shows most students are seeking emergency financial support for unexpected costs associated with housing, food, transportation, and healthcare. Colleges and universities, we know, don't have enough funding for the demonstrated student need. They're always running out of these dollars. So additional funding would make a significant difference in keeping students on their path to a degree. And with that, we can hear from testifiers.
Thank you so much, Senator. Our first testifier is Paula Shepherd, Associate Vice Chancellor, Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. Welcome. Please introduce yourself for the record and begin your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair Fateh and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Paul Shepherd, and I have the honor to serve as the Associate Vice Chancellor for Student Affairs and Enrollment Management for the Minnesota State System. I am honored to testify regarding Senate File 2406. And I'm grateful to Senator Umu Verbaeten for her leadership in this area and grateful for the legislative support that created our emergency grant program. To date, as was said, almost 5,000 students have been awarded an emergency grant since the launch of our program in March of 2024. And this program is addressing unexpected financial emergencies. We are also very happy to report that so far we have disbursed over $3 million to students who are in need and experiencing those unexpected financial emergencies that often interfere with their ability to remain enrolled. The average grant amount received is just under $700, and we are also excited to report that the average time from a submitted application to an approved application, if they are approved, is about 3 days. So this is a testament to the work of our staff and faculty at our colleges and universities administering this program. Our experience since the launch of the program has demonstrated the need for additional resources to support our students. Data from the program also shows that 38% of our students in our system who have received an emergency grant reported experiencing homelessness during their time as a student, and 31% of students receiving an emergency grant shared they are responsible for at least one minor child. This program has demonstrated that timely financial support can make a significant difference in keeping students on their path to a degree. Directly allocating the emergency grant funding to Minnesota State would streamline the administration of the program, and this approach would allow for a more efficient operation of our grant program. Minnesota State is grateful for your support and consideration of this bill that would enable Minnesota State to more efficiently and effectively get much needed support to students in need so they can continue to pursue their educational goals and meet workforce needs. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Our next testifier is on Zoom, Shaniqua Robinson, who is a student at Minneapolis College. Welcome. Please introduce yourself for the record and begin.
Thank you for inviting me here and for the opportunity to share my personal experience as a student who received an emergency grant. It is an honor to talk about this program. My name is Shaniqua Robinson, and I am a North Hennepin Community College graduate. I suppose this means I'm a newly alum. I am presently in the NHCC Business Pathway Program post-graduation, fulfilling prerequisite requirements in preparation to attend the University of Minnesota in the fall. I am a member of the LEAD MN Governing Council. I graduated with my associate's degree in liberal arts and sciences, something I would have never been able to do if it had not been for the emergency grant program provided by the North Hennepin Community College. Here's my story. I am a mother of five children, and up until this year, my family of six was supported by my income as a medical assistant, grossing roughly $30,000 to $35,000 a year. Due to severe hardships, including inability to cover childcare costs, I dropped out of college over 6 years ago. I was attending Indiana University Northwest, majoring in business administration. I had high hopes, but financially I struggled, and my struggles prohibited me to focus on my education, so I quit. During my quitting season, me and my children experienced every hardship from homelessness, shelter living, lack, and so on. It was once I visited a food pantry in search of help to feed my family that I realized that it was time for a change. While there, I asked the representative, how much would I have to make in order to no longer be considered impoverished? She, upon looking at a sliding scale based upon family size, said that I would have to make $100,000 a year in order to no longer qualify for low-income benefits. I knew I had to go back to school. The only conflict is returning to school did not eliminate my financial struggles. It wouldn't be until I graduated and found a career that I would be able to live in a different tax bracket. This is where the emergency grant program came in. I applied for the grant to offset the cost of books and paid past due utilities. It came right on time and helped me to focus on my studies and not on whether or not me and my children would have to struggle and I would have to quit again. Fast forward, I didn't quit, I graduated. NHCC helped me to begin the process of winning and reaching my goal of no longer being at poverty level. I am grateful that they provided the funding, and I hope they can continue to do so for other poverty cycle breakers like myself. Thank you for your time today. I am grateful for the opportunity. I am grateful for the support that the Minnesota legislature has invested in the emergency grant program so that an unexpected expense doesn't keep students like myself from their college education. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Robinson. Our final testifier is Casey Metcalf, Government Relations Manager with Students United. Welcome, introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Hello, for the record, my name is Casey Metcalf, Manager of Government Relations at Students United, representing 55,000 students from Minnesota State Universities. I'm here to support Senate File 24006, which continues Minnesota's commitment to providing emergency grant support that keeps students in college. An unexpected medical bill, childcare costs incurred so a student can attend night class, a replaced alternator or a stolen catalytic converter on a used car. For established professionals, these unforeseen costs are an inconvenience. For Minnesota college students, these small expenses can be the difference between dropping out and continuing their education. Students United visits all our campuses each year in the fall and spring to listen to student stories, bring patterns to our student board of directors, and set legislative priorities. We've heard from students whose degree sat on a knife's edge because of something like a stolen catalytic converter or a medical bill. Basic needs coordinators who've worked outside of the workday to make sure a student living in their car could make it to the beginning of their next lease. The emergency grant program is a vital resource for Minnesota students, especially those who are low income and first generation. We know that the cost of attending college is more than just tuition. It's the cost associated with living in a new place and independently balancing school, family, and work responsibilities. When these costs come to bear and threaten to take students out of college, schools have emergency grant funding to keep students on track and avoid lengthy disruptions to their degrees. Emergency grants are especially valuable for student parents. Parenting students make up almost a quarter of the undergraduate student population in the U.S. Furthermore, 6 in 10 parenting students work over 30 hours per week while going to school, studying, and caring for children. As Minnesota wrestles with ballooning childcare costs, the emergency grant program is an important tool to support parents in achieving a degree. We're grateful to Senator Umu Verbaeten for carrying this important bill that streamlines existing processes by providing direct appropriation to MinState and the University of Minnesota. I ask this committee continues to support this vital investment in our students' education.
Thank you so much for your testimony. We'll now go to member questions. Are there any questions from our members? Seeing none, I see that you have an amendment, Senator.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. So I talked about this briefly at the beginning, but the bill that we had was a part of the MinState request, and so this amendment just would send the money directly to the institutions, which is the preference of our systems and the Office of Higher Education. It does also have reporting requirements and then just some guidance for the grants that are still funneled through OHE first. So those are the changes, but I'd like to move the A2 amendment.
Senator Umu Verbaeten moves the A2 amendment. Any discussion? Oh, thank you, Senator Utke. Got it? Awesome. Senator Umu Verbaeten moves the A2 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The amendment is adopted. Senator Umu Verbaeten.
Thank you. I think the testifiers did a great job of explaining why this is important, and I'm grateful to the committee for supporting this in the past, and hope we can do so again.
Thank you. Senator, does the A2 amendment appropriate any new money?
Again, there was the MinState request for the underlying bill. And then for the new amendment, there is the differentiation between what's going directly to Minnesota State, Good. The University of Minnesota, and then through the Office of Higher Education. So I Good. Believe so, but council can correct me if I'm wrong.
Ms. Birch.
The A2 amendment does not appropriate any new money above the base. It just changes the way that it's allocated to institutions.
Thank you, Ms. Bush. Thank you. Any other questions for members? Senator Farnsworth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm looking at the amendment and the totals, and of course it's well documented that I'm not a math person. This looks like it's less. When I add up the three amounts for the MinState, for the privates, and for the U, it looks like it's less than the original $5 million. Am I missing something, or is there a reason for that?
Senator Umu Verbaeten.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator, for the question. I think the intention was to just change the way the money was distributed, but if council could just speak to what we had. I know we've had money in the base in the past for this program, and then how that changes for the amendment that we have before us.
Thank you, Senator. Ms. Birch.
The amount that I currently have in the base for the Emergency Assistance for Post-Secondary Students grants is $3,579,000 per year. So I'm wondering the $5 million, what you're referencing.
Thank you. I think the original appropriation request was $5 million, but it's changed with the DE.
Okay, Mr. Chair. Yeah. So yes. I'll do my best to explain this as well. I couldn't remember what was in the base, but so we have what was in the base already, which matches what's in the amendment. And then the original bill that was introduced was slightly above because it aligned with Minnesota State's request. Does that make sense?
Thank you, Senator. Senator Farnsworth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for clarifying that. The only other question I have is, and I'm guessing that it, I think I know the answer, that Minn State has the most students, so they get the most. But does this, is this allocated like on a per student estimate, or what's the reason that Minn State got 2.25, the U got 779, and the Office of Higher Education? I'm just wondering, is that based on the estimated student population?
Senator Umar-Rabin.
Mr. Chair, Senator, thanks for the question. I would say yes, and I think also looking at the need in the different systems, one of the things that the Office of Higher Education is instructed to do in a later subdivision is to look at, you know, institutions that have a demonstrable homeless student population. That's something that we've heard Minnesota State talk about a lot. So it's kind of roughly based on the amount of students and then the sort of needs that we see at those institutions and the demonstrated need in Minnesota State specifically.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator. Any other questions from members? With no further questions, the bill is now laid over. Next up, we have SF-2516. Senator Putnam, welcome back. And I believe you have two testifiers with you today, Mr. Mike Blair from CentraCare, as well as Jill Amsbury, Campus Assistant Dean, UMN Medical School. And you may begin.
Thank you much, Mr. Chair, for welcoming me back and for obviously missing me in the interim. I appreciate both those things very much. Mr. Chair, the bill we're about to hear about is Senate File 2516. It's about a residency program at the CentraCare University of Minnesota Hospital, Medical School, that we supported and opened just 2 years ago. Now, members, all y'all know that rural healthcare is in crisis. We don't have enough physicians to see our patients, and this challenge is only projected to get worse. You have all heard stories about how the rural healthcare crisis is impacting people's health outcomes and the economy and the way of life of everyone in greater Minnesota. And by training future physicians to serve rural Minnesota, we can help address the physician shortage crisis facing rural communities and help actually reinvigorate rural communities themselves. CentraCare has partnered with the University of Minnesota to create the first new medical school in Minnesota in over 50 years. This committee helped make that happen. So thanks for that. But in order for the school to fulfill its promise to make sure that those who learn in central Minnesota will stay in central Minnesota and to attract even more physicians to greater Minnesota, we need to fund a functional residency program, which is what this bill will do. In essence, Mr. Chair and members, we put the resources in to start in the school. We put some other resources into building the school. Now we got to find a way to get students to practice in the school. For context, developing a physician requires several stages of education, a 4-year undergraduate degree, a 4-year medical doctorate, and residency training to prepare for independent practice. CentraCare's new program will focus on the specialties of greatest needs as the pillars of access to care and rural health, including family medicine, pediatrics, psychiatry, internal medicine, and general surgery. With this program in effect, we will be training approximately 58 FTE of residency physicians in any given year, graduating 20 new doctors a year that had training specifically focused on rural communities. CentraCare and the University of Minnesota have pursued and will continue to pursue all available funding streams via sustained federal funding, Medicaid support, and state and federal grants, and philanthropy. But despite these efforts, each program will operate at an annual budget deficit. Now, consistency in funding a program like this is key. These kinds of programs develop reputations, and students commit to a program for a period of time. It takes years to develop both. Not having sustainable funding would have a chilling effect on the quality and health of this program, and it is too important for us not to invest in every element of it. Mr. Chair, that's the nature of this bill. It is, in essence, a $1.5 million appropriation to support this medical education, which my friends here can explain to you a little bit better than I can.
Thank you, Mr. Senator Putnam. Welcome. Please introduce yourself for the record, and you may begin.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Fateh. Thank you, members of the committee. If you notice in the agenda, it's mentioned that it is Jill Emsbury. I am not Jill Emsbury. My name is Shali Prasad. I'm a professor of family medicine and community health. I'm also the associate vice president for rural health at the University of Minnesota. And I've been a partner in the growth of this medical school for the past many years, and I'm obviously very excited. I was a rural doc for many years, and majority of my work has been in rural and underserved areas. And the ingredients that are needed to develop rural workforce are a little more complicated than setting up a school. Setting up a school is an important step. But what we need to do is to recruit from rural areas, which we have done a really good job for this first batch. The medical school is going to open its first batch this coming summer, fall. And I'm really excited that we have 24 students, all from central, west central, and southwestern Minnesota. We are targeting rural areas. Many of these students would not have gotten to medical school despite having fantastic scores, despite being brilliant students. So this is an opportunity for us to get them. And by the way, that's one of the biggest predictors for developing doctors who go to rural areas, recruiting from rural areas. So that part of the equation, we are already putting enough effort, we're doing a good job. But like Senator Putnam explained, the second step of this is to make sure that the training occurs in rural-focused residencies in areas that are close by. Because the second biggest predictor for doctors going to rural areas is training closer to home. I don't have to tell you that if you see the folks who are graduating from medical school go to residencies outside where they are, say, for example, in a big city or to Chicago or to New York or San Francisco, the chances of us retaining them drops significantly. So that second predictor of what rural retention is a very critical part of what we need to be doing. So what we are asking for is more effort in creating these rural residency sites within the center care umbrella and making sure that these rural residency sites are rural-focused residencies. So they'll end up in our small towns, critical access hospitals, rural areas where the need for physicians is the greatest. A third part I want to bring up, and this is a very critical part, there is a significant amount of contribution that these doctors are going to do in the healthcare of rural areas within the state of Minnesota. We know that already. This is actually an investment beyond the healthcare, because there are predictions that every family medicine physician who ends up in a rural area adds to the economy by about $1 million. And a family medicine doc who does OB adds to that economy in that rural area about $1.5 million per year. So it's an investment in the lively nature of what is rural in the state of Minnesota. So I feel that this is a critical step in the growth of the partnership we have from the University of Minnesota and CentraCare. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. With that, we'll go to our final testifier, Mr. Blair.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I am Mike Blair. I'm the Chief Financial Officer and Senior Vice President of Academic Affairs at CentraCare. I'd like to first give a special thank you to Senator Putnam here for sponsoring our bill and being a big advocate of this initiative. It was 3 years ago when Dr. Holman, who is the CEO of CentraCare, and Dr. Toller, who is the Dean of the University of Minnesota Medical School, got together with a dream that we could better the health of rural Minnesotans. And that was really focused around, could we open up a new medical school campus? It's going to open this fall, as Dr. Prasad said. Just wonderful. I can also share that Dr. Jill Amsberg, who's the associate dean, she's a pediatrician, she's actually taking care of her sick child today, which is just fits perfect for a pediatrician, has shared that just the emotion of those incoming students about the ability to get into medical school with the potential to go back and serve the areas where they grew up. But the reality is, once you're done with your 4 years of medical school, you have to train. And that's the residency program. And so early on, we set the goal that if we were going to graduate 24 students every year, and the average residency program takes 3 years, we had to have enough training slots. So we needed 72 training slots, right, theoretically, when we get up to the full graduating amount. We currently have 18, but to get from that 18 to the 72 is a pretty significant increase. So I will also give a special thanks to this committee as well, as you really helped get this off the ground. With the $10 million that you funded in the last budget went a long ways to getting this started. Because, you know, one of the largest challenges with starting up a new medical school is all your costs start before the tuition starts. So we were able to use about $5 million of that $10 million to start up the medical school. We're also looking to fund research that's specific to rural residents, better in the health of rural residents. And I have to tell you, the partnership that we have with the University of Minnesota has been fabulous. Dr. Crawford, who heads up their research area, he's been very involved in getting this research institute up and going. Dr. Prasad and I are co-chairs of the governance structure for it. Chief of Staff Emily Lawrence has been key to getting this whole process moving. CFO Bill Seibert at the university also has been really key to this. But as we said, you know, the challenge with that is that the funding for residency programs is far below what it is the cost to train these individuals. And when we set that goal to get to 72, you know, moving from the 18 we have today, that will create a structural deficit by year 10 of about $10 million. So if you think about that $10 million, we think over that 10-year period, we're going to put, being centered here, about $55 million into the residency program. That's on top of the $20 million that we're backstopping the medical school, and another $5 to $10 million that we're going to put into the research institute. And the point for mentioning of that is we want the committee to know that we are absolutely dedicated to this. We're also looking at philanthropic sources. Dr. Jesse Roski, who's with us today, and she's a project lead on the residency programs, is scouring anything we can find at the federal level to try to offset some of that impact. So for us, you know, this is a start. You know, what we've asked through Senator Putnam, you know, the, you know, $1.5 million, you know, for those next 2 years really helps with that startup. Because remember, we're starting up new programs, as Senator Putnam mentioned. These programs have all been identified by the Minnesota Department of Health of specific shortage areas in rural Minnesota. So it's a family medicine, it's pediatrics, it's psychiatry, it's obstetrics. You probably all hear this. You know those are shortage areas. We know the crisis in mental health in rural areas. So we're trying to get more psychiatric residents, pediatricians, same thing. So that's really the focus that we have today, and that's why we are here to the group. And with that, I will just close it out with a few words that we use at CentraCare, and that is, if not us, then who? If we don't take on the access issues in rural Minnesota, who's going to do it? And the other is, if not now, then when? If we don't want to start addressing this today, when are we ever going to address it? And with that, I will turn it back to you, Chair Fateh, for any questions that you or the members may have.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Are there any questions from members? Seeing none, Senator Putnam, any closing comments?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members, for your attention to this issue. This is exceedingly important. These are students that we're talking about. We're supporting students who will have a tremendous impact on the health of our entire state. But I also want to add about potential economic benefits. Doctors spend money in the communities where they live. And this is a great opportunity for revitalizing all of Greater Minnesota and providing new health to everyone who lives there. So thank you very much for your consideration. And I'll say one more time, this is super important.
Thank you so much, Senator Putnam. And with that, the bill is now laid over.
Thank you.
And with no further business, the committee is now adjourned.